what goes up. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser here with me. And Leonard Maltin is back on the phone with us today. You know Leonard from all his years at Entertainment Tonight and on his website, leonardmaltin.com, and his podcast, Maltin on Movies. I've asked Leonard to come back on the show today because we're 9 days away from the Academy Awards. And while we're not going to do specific predictions about who will win in each of the categories, I want to know some of the behind-the-scenes stories of what it's like to cover the world's biggest movie-related event. Leonard, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Paul. Always nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
Is it 9 days or is it 900 days left?
No.
I have to tell you, it's different. You know, living in L.A. is different. It's just different from being anywhere else when we're talking about Oscar season.
Yeah.
Because you know how we all felt about the last presidential election, how it was never going to end?
Yes.
This has nothing to do with your political beliefs.
Right.
It was just that the process just seemed to take a long, long time.
Yeah.
And we were all a little tired of it, I think it's fair to say. Well, that's what's happening now in Hollywood. There is, even in these closing days, I think the final ballots are being voted on Tuesday. I'm pretty sure that's correct. They used to be a little earlier, but then they used to use the U.S. mails, and now they do it electronically.
Ah.
So they've saved a few days, and that's added days to the campaigning.
So does that mean every place you go, every newspaper you pick up,
yes,
every website you visit?
Yes, and more that you can't even imagine. They are still having last-minute screenings with the filmmakers and the stars in the hopes of persuading just a few more people that La La Land is the way to go, or that Fences is the way to go, or that Lion is the way to go, or that Manchester by the Sea is the one you can't miss. And it gets, to me, to be a little unseemly. That's just my feeling about it. I guess I'm naive. I guess I am still a little wide-eyed, even after all these years. I am of the belief that making the good movie or giving the good performance or having written the great screenplay should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, but of course, campaigning is nothing new. This has been going on for decades, so
right,
it's not like I've just discovered something. But it seems to be at its worst.
Now, what about this luncheon that they have every year? Do you get to go to the Oscar nominees luncheon?
Well, that is one of the great privileges of mine. That is maybe the best perk of my life, is that some over the years I've hosted a number of events for the Academy. The Academy, which is known to most people just for giving out those awards every year, does programming and not just here in Los Angeles, all year round around the world. They put on film shows, they present seminars, they run a world-class library and archive. They have also a film archive where they restore and preserve films. They do many, many good things. And it's all funded by the Oscars.
Yep.
It's funded by the fees they get for airing that one TV special every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I've hosted a number of tributes and events for them over the years. And about, I don't know, 15 or more years ago, as a kind of a thank you gesture, they invited me to attend the Oscar nominees luncheon. And now they've been inviting other members of the press to come too. It's still a pretty hot ticket because the purpose of it is to celebrate the nominees.
And this is not just the acting nominees. This is
every category. What's great about it, Paul, is that even the tables are mixed up. There's no Manchester by the Sea table or Fences table. Everybody's jumbled up. So you could have a $20 million movie star sitting next to a Belgian animator, sitting next to a sound designer, sitting next to a documentary short subject maker. And then ultimately they call everyone up onto the bleachers alphabetically, one by one. Each one gets a round of applause until they have all 140 or 50 or 60 people standing together to take what they call the annual class photo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite wonderful. Many people cherish this event. and fly in from around the world, even if they're busy working on another movie or if they have to inconvenience themselves, because it's just that special.
So who did you get to sit with this year?
Oh, gosh. Well, I had a pretty good table because I was sitting with one of the a woman who's one of the board of governors, who is one of the producers of my brain just went dead, which is happening to me a lot this week. Hidden Figures.
Okay.
One of the producers of Hidden Figures, Donna Gigliotti. I was sitting next to Michael Giacchino, the incredibly talented composer,
mm-hmm.
who has composed the scores for all of J.J. Abrams' movies. He just did, Star Wars Rogue One.
Yep.
He does Pixar movies, and he's a delightful guy. And he was sitting next to the Oscar-nominated composer of La La Land, Justin Hurwitz, who was very excited to be with Michael Giacchino.
Yeah.
So I got to be like the third ear listening in on their conversations as well. So it was a pretty exciting lunch for me.
So when the press is there, and I know you weren't there in your role as a member of the press, you were there as an invited guest of the Academy, but you said that there are other members of the press who are there. Does that mean there's that constant scrum to try to get...
No, not at all. Once there's an arrivals line, where like a red carpet,
yeah.
and the photogs are there and the videographers are there. And they can the attendees can choose to walk on that red carpet or not, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And they can pose or choose not to pose. But once they get inside the Beverly Hilton ballroom, there's no media. And even the people who are there as media, who may be writing it up, as I did for my website, the flash photos aren't going off. It's a private event.
Nice.
And very intimate and very collegial. I mean, there's no tension. It's not like Oscar night when you're all nervous and when there are cameras on you at every moment. This is an afternoon where you can approach anybody because they're approachable.
Mm-hmm.
In years past, I've strode over and, shook hands with all sorts of people that I admire, that I've always wanted to meet. Last year, I dare say, I got a hug from Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
You didn't tell Alice about that, did you?
I told her immediately. without a moment's hesitation. it's a really cool thing. And everybody there, as I say, is grateful to be there. And it's the proper kind of recognition because it's saying you are all important.
Yeah.
You all contributed to what we consider, or what is widely considered to be, a roster of the best movies of the year.
Yeah.
Whether or not whether you made, as I say, a documentary short, or an animated short subject, or contributed to the sound or visual effects or makeup of a movie, or made a foreign language film, or starred in a big movie, you're all appreciated.
I was asking you about whether there's a scrum for these quick little interviews with people, because I know that in the past, especially when you were at ET, you were pressed into service having to do that, where you get 3, maybe 4 minutes with somebody before their publicist moves them on to the next person.
Well, here's what happens after the luncheon.
Oh.
After the luncheon, it's always at the Beverly Hilton. The Beverly Hilton has a lovely and large swimming pool. And with a kind of a giant patio that surrounds it. And when the first year that I was there, CNN and I think we at Entertainment Tonight, one other outlet, set up a little camera crew around the pool and asked ahead of time the publicist for the stars if they would mind coming down and saying a few words after the lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the people who come to this lunch don't want to lose that nice collegial glow of the moment, and I don't blame them a bit.
Yep.
They're entitled to enjoy that privacy and that lovely moment. But some of them are persuaded by their publicists, by their studios, and maybe they just feel like doing it, that you should not miss any opportunity to get out there and beat the drums for your movie. So I have worked that luncheon as well. I've been one of those guys sitting around the pool waiting for George Clooney,
mm-hmm.
waiting for Kate Blanchett, or waiting for any number of people to come around and give us a few minutes of their time.
Now, when you have to do a short little 3 or 4 minute thing before they're, again, they're hustled off to the next person, do you ever get anything valuable out of that? I know TV is always about 15-second clips anyway, but do you ever think to yourself, well, I'm glad I got them to say that?
Well, every now and then you get a little nugget. You know, every now and then, the prototypical question I would ask on those days is, who did you meet today that you were excited to meet?
Mm.
Or who were you standing next to in the class photo?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's interesting, actually.
Yep.
And one year I said to Martin Scorsese, I said to Marty, like I can call him Marty.
Yeah.
Who'd you meet today that you were excited to meet? He said, June Foray.
Oh.
June Foray has been on the Board of Governors in the short subject branch for many, many years. She's the voice of Rocky from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yep.
And Granny in the Tweety and Sylvester cartoons.
And a great lady and one of the all-time great voices for animation. And still, she's in her mid to late 90s, I
Correct.
Believe, now. And still working.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of meeting her and doing a little Rocky and Bullwinkle script with her many, many years ago. And what a great woman she is.
She's the best. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Yes.
And so it was heartening to hear that Mr. Scorsese, one of the preeminent filmmakers of our generation,
yeah,
appreciated meeting June Foray.
Oh, that's great.
So to me, that was a question worth asking and getting that answer for.
Yeah. Now, I saw on your website this week that you recently hosted an event at the Santa Barbara Film Festival honoring Denzel Washington.
That's true.
I guess it was you having a conversation on stage in front of several hundred people with Denzel.
2,000, but who's counting?
2,000 people. And you wrote up that one of the questions you always wanted to ask him was about Saint Elsewhere. Would you share that with my audience?
Sure. Well, as you know, and as anybody who follows TV carefully can attest, what often happens is if somebody becomes a star on a television show, the first thing they want to do is leave that television show
mm-hmm.
and get to make movies. Now, things have changed because television has changed so much in the past few years. But this is old-school television, let's call it.
And this is 30 years ago he was on St. Elsewhere.
It is 30 years ago when there were just three networks, exactly. But he stayed with the show for its entire run. And I always wondered why. And he gave me a very simple and logical and actually upbeat, a positive answer, that the producer was kind enough to write around his character, since he didn't carry the show by himself. There were 16 characters on that show, if you remember. It was an ensemble.
Yeah.
So he would arrange to write him, write his character around things so that he could get time off to make films like A Soldier's Story and Cry Freedom and Glory.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the best of both worlds. And that was because of Bruce Paltrow, Gwyneth Paltrow's father, who was the co-creator and co-executive producer of St. Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Denzel's going to win Best Actor, especially after he just won the SAG Award?
Well, you know, I'm not an odds maker.
Yeah? I'm just asking your opinion. I'm not holding you to it.
I don't know. He's worth it. Listen, all five of those guys gave great performances.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would be happy to see him win. He's deserving.
Yeah. Certainly. Well, I got to ask you about another guy who is nominated this year, and that's Mel Gibson,
yes.
whose movie was just unbelievable, I think, when it came to making war movies. It was evocative in some ways of the first 25 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. Just crushing war footage that I think technology made possible in a way that even Spielberg would be jealous of, that he couldn't have when he made his movie. But, of course, he was embroiled in this controversy a decade ago. With Mel Gibson being nominated for an Oscar, is it safe to say that they have re-welcomed him back?
Well, you know, it depends on who you're talking to. Who is they? You know?
The general,
there's no they.
No, there's no general Hollywood community?
No, there isn't. Because a lot of the Hollywood community lives in New York, truly,
mm-hmm.
Or in London. The membership is international, and there's no cabal. You know, people talk about the Academy as if it's a monolith. I hate the word snubbed. People say, oh, the Academy snubbed so-and-so.
Amy Adams, for instance, this year.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Amy Adams, I was disappointed not to see nominated as Best Actress.
Me too.
Because she's so great in Arrival.
Yep.
And that film, which is a great film, depends so much on her incredible performance.
Right.
But there are only five slots. And so she probably would have been the sixth. If I were a betting man, I would bet on that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no conspiracy where all 7,000 members of the Academy got together in a gigantic auditorium and said, let's all snub Amy Adams. It just doesn't happen that way. Nor did all 7,000 of them get together and say, let's welcome back Mel Gibson. you know, it's only the director's branch of the Academy that nominate Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
And that branch is made up of the creme de la creme. These are the preeminent film directors alive around the globe. And I think they judge the work, not the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so whatever reservations or feelings, and there are some heated feelings, still exist about Mel Gibson. He got that nomination.
And I guess the question will only be answered by whether or not he gets hired to direct and star in movies by people who say, you know what, I like him, he's okay with me, I don't care what 7,000 people think, I want to hire him.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about here, Leonard, is it leaked out this week that the Best Picture Award is going to be handed out by Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, kind of in honor of their milestone movie from 50 years ago, Bonnie and Clyde.
No, see, that can't be 50 years ago. You must be wrong. Because if that was 50 years ago,
yeah, we are.
I'm getting old.
We are that old. Why was that such a monumental movie? Why does it have a special place in history?
Well, because it's a great movie, and it was considered kind of a game changer. Not just in its depiction of violence. A lot of people remember that. The climactic shootout, that's not a spoiler, but there is a climactic shootout.
It's 50 years ago, you can spoil it.
But it was a very daring film in the way it told its story of these two criminals, the way some people feel it glamorized these two criminals. And it was told in Arthur Penn, the director, and Robert Benton and Leslie Newman, the screenwriters, and Warren Beatty, who produced the movie, as well as starring in it, told it in a style that was really less traditional Hollywood than French New Wave cinema. It was a very bold movie in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It also was a showcase for some up-and-coming talent. Most of us had not seen Gene Hackman before that movie, and, of course, that helped springboard his remarkable career.
Yep.
Many people were unfamiliar even with Gene Wilder, who has a small but significant role.
Right.
Even Michael J. Pollard, the character actor who's so good in that movie.
Estelle Parsons.
And Estelle Parsons. I mean, there are no weak links in that movie.
Right. It is a great one. It'll be good to see them back on stage together again, even if it's just for a few minutes. The problem with bringing out people who are this important in the history of cinema is by the time they get the Best Picture, the show's always crammed because they're always running late, and the Best Picture person gets to say four words and then just present the award.
Pretty much.
I hope that they will take a moment to talk about the importance of that game-changing movie that they made 50 years ago.
Well, we'll only know after the fact.
Yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate you taking the time to join me again this afternoon, Leonard.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for plugging my podcast, which, as you mentioned, is called Malfin on Movies.
Right.
And which is available absolutely free on iTunes or at the Nerdist website, and my website, leonardmaltin.com, which has links to all of that.
There you go. There are all the plugs
for Leonard. But I didn't have to say those things because you already said them.
There you go. Yeah, I always will take care of you. But
you're very kind.
You did it there yourself. Thanks, Leonard.
Take care, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.